Thank you. May it please the court, I'm Linda Sizek, and I represent Timothy Discoli, the appellant in this matter. While I don't want to just recite my arguments in the petition and the brief, I do want to highlight some issues. First of all, the two main issues in this appeal are, one, whether or not when the officers went in to arrest Mr. Discoli after their initial encounter with him, whether they had probable cause to arrest, and subsequently whether there was, I know it was an issue as to whether or not I added it in the error portion of my petition, but obviously they didn't have probable cause to arrest him for breach of the peace. They wouldn't have proof beyond a reasonable doubt to convict him on that.
Ms. Sizek, this is Judge Petty. Let me
Yes.
ask a fundamental question about this right to resist an unlawful arrest, the common law right, in the context of whether probable cause exists or not. We have situations where police officers are out late at night, 2 o'clock in the morning. They have to make snap decisions. What standard do we apply to determining whether the arrest is unlawful? Is it a review by this court, or do we apply more of a reasonable police officer test?
Well, I think, Your Honor, the obviously the facts of the situation are, I think, not reviewable, and are spelled out in the transcripts pretty well. But I think whether or not an arrest is was legal is a matter of law, and that's something that the court looks at de novo with, again,
but,
with the facts
well,
being.
Let me kind of rephrase my question. This police officer most likely would not be subject to civil damages. He would have qualified immunity, and that means he would be immune. Citing U.S. Supreme Court, government officials performing discretionary functions are shielded from civil liability insofar as their conduct does not violate clearly established statutory or constitutional rights of which a reasonable person would have known. Why shouldn't we apply that same standard in assessing the reasonableness of this arrest?
Well, I think, Your Honor, there's the difference between using a reasonable officer standard, but again, even the question would be, would a reasonable officer, given the facts and circumstances, would he have probable cause to arrest somebody for essentially, if you look at the statements by both Minix and Officer Minix and Officer Hilton, I'm for the purposes of the appeal, I'm mostly just relying on the statements of the officers themselves. What we have here is the officers essentially responding to a 911 hang-up. They go there. Clearly, my client, Mr. Discoli, was not in the best of moods.
Well, I understand the facts, but the legal argument, why wouldn't a reasonable police officer believe that the conduct of the defendant out in public in outside the apartment constituted a violation of the statute or any other statute, for instance, 416, abusive language, 415, disorderly conduct, 388, profane swearing. Why wouldn't a reasonable police officer believe that he'd committed an offense?
Again, Your Honor, I think it's not a matter of whether or not I think you can use the reasonable officer standard, but based on that standard, nothing that if you look at the legal, the statute and the case law, I don't think any reasonable officer would have concluded that Mr. Discoli had committed a crime. And if you
Why?
Look at the because if you look at the fact that department. They have closed the call. Officer Hilton had said they had called dispatch, and it was after dispatch, after calling dispatch, they heard Mr. Descoli.
Yeah, I know the facts, but why aren't those facts sufficient for a reasonable police officer, for instance, to believe that he committed the violation of 18.2416, abusive language to another?
Again, there has to be something obscene, and the case law in just saying F the police or get the F out of there, it's long been established that saying those words alone is not enough to qualify for an arrest.
Do you think that they teach, for instance, Chablinsky at the police academy? I mean, are police officers taught constitutional law?
I do believe so, Your Honor. I mean, I've been practicing quite a long time, and I know that basically the police officers are in court all the time with defense attorneys arguing that they violated some constitutional right of our clients. Certainly on searches and seizures, the police know exactly what they can and can't get away with, or, you know, in terms of what the limits are of their constitutional rights. And again, their own statements say they told him to keep the peace. He did not leave his apartment. He was inside, and it's a house that's been essentially converted into a duplex, and there's a small, very small foyer.
Counsel?
Mr. Descoli never came outside of the house.
Counsel? Isn't it a fair inference that if the police officers heard him yelling, that anybody else outside could have heard him yelling?
No, Your Honor. I don't think that's. We had his neighbor, Mr. Harris, a minister, testify that he was awake at that hour, and the only thing that drew his attention was essentially when the conflict ended up out on the porch at the time when Mr. Descoli was in custody. Essentially, this was in January. This was 11 o'clock at night. There were no people on the streets. People had their windows closed. It was cold out. Mr. Descoli had his window cracked open, and I believe it was basically stated somewhere in probably transcripts from the motion to reconsider that essentially the house the street is not that far from the porch and the window. This is a house that's very close to the street. And in terms of the police saying they were investigating a violation of essentially a noise violation, I questioned the officers on what exactly
We understand the facts. I'm interested in the legal concepts involved here. You've got, for instance, you've got in this case not just the police made an arrest, and they presented their facts to a magistrate, a judicial officer. The magistrate concluded there was probable cause, and then the case was tried, and the court found beyond a reasonable doubt that he'd committed the offense, and you do not challenge the sufficiency of the evidence to support that conviction. So where does that leave us in our analysis from a legal perspective? I mean, that's very similar to Neff versus Commonwealth.
Your Honor, I did answer that issue. I think it's wrong to say I did not challenge the misdemeanor, which was essentially the failure to keep the peace. We had a trial on that matter in general district court.
But your only challenge to that is on the probable cause. You did not challenge the sufficiency of the evidence to support the conviction. So we have that. And even if they didn't have probable cause to make the arrest, the magistrate found otherwise, and he was arrested on the warrant, and you can't challenge the magistrate's finding.
Again, the magistrate is not being presented with essentially a detailed and cross-examined account of what happened. He was given, he or she was given, essentially, we don't even know what was told to the magistrate, so we can't say what the police officers told the magistrate to get the warrant. Again, I understand.
Well, that's part of the problem. He was arrested ultimately on the warrant. The warrant was issued commanding his arrest, and the officer executed that warrant and arrested him. And that's
he
a
was
judicial
arrested
finding
at
of probable.
Time.
He was also arrested on the warrant. He was taken into custody, and that I grant you is an arrest. But once the warrant is issued, the warrant commands the arrest of the defendant, and the warrant is then executed by the physical rearrest, if you will, of the defendant. So if we're just looking at the probable cause for the misdemeanor, it seems to me that the magistrate has resolved that problem for us, and you don't challenge that at all.
Again, Your Honor, the main issue is whether or not the police had probable cause at the time to arrest him, and when he went into his apartment, if they didn't have probable cause at that time, then Mr. Despoli had a right to use reasonable self-defense to resist what he believed was an illegal arrest.
That takes me back to my first question, and this is very problematic for me. I'm very troubled by this. We have people killed every day by police officers. If we allow the defendant to decide whether or not he has the right to resist an arrest, we're putting their safety at risk, and we're putting the safety of police officers at risk. The Supreme Court of the United States has held that officers are entitled to make a reasonable mistake of law, Hine versus North Carolina. So even if you're correct that they didn't have technical probable cause, didn't they have sufficient basis to arrest him in their minds that made the arrest reasonable?
I still disagree, Your Honor. And again, getting back to the NEF, I did argue that in the conclusion we asked that essentially the conviction for failure to keep the peace be overturned also. So I think it was clear that I was challenging the convictions on both the misdemeanor and the felony. And again, the question is whether a reasonable police officer who had already left the scene, had essentially called the dispatch and said they were done the investigation, and they saw Mr. Descol, or they heard him inside, not even addressing them at the time, say "F you," something to that effect, and then he essentially gave them the finger out of the window. There was nothing to say that he had breached the peace.
Counsel, you have approximately 2 minutes left. You did not reserve any time for rebuttal. Do you desire to continue, or do you want to save those 2 minutes?
I'll save those 2 minutes, ma'am.
Thank you. Mr. Obenchain.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Chris Obenchain representing the Commonwealth in this matter. And as we've already talked about, this rests upon probable cause, whether the officers have probable cause to arrest Mr. Descalzi. The argument of Mr. Descalzi is essentially that he didn't breach the peace, that he didn't violate 18.2-416. But I think the court is correct in understanding that the standard here is what a reasonable officer believed, looking at the totality of the facts and circumstances at the time, and whether there was a probability or a substantial chance of criminal activity, not necessarily an actual showing of criminal activity. I think if we look at the statute, which again, 18.2-463 was what he was arrested for. The magistrate issued that warrant. He was convicted of that, and he doesn't challenge the sufficiency of the evidence on that conviction. That statute does not require, is not a breach of the peace. That statute is failure to assist a law enforcement officer in the execution of their duties. The gravamen of the offenses is quite different. It's that the officer gave an order, and that the individual violated or refused or neglected to abide by that order. I think given the circumstances, the facts that the trial court found in this case, it would have been clear to the officer that that's what occurred.
Counsel?
Yes, Your Honor.
Let me ask you this. In our determination of probable cause at this level, taking into account the standard of review, does it really matter what offense the trial court concluded established probable cause below?
No, Your Honor, it does. It doesn't. It doesn't matter which offense, as long as there was an offense that occurred, as long as the officers had probable cause to arrest him for some offense, it doesn't matter whether he violated 18.2-463 or another statute. And I think certainly, you know, Mr. Descali was warned by the officers at the scene that he may be in violation of obstruction of justice as well. And so I think arguably they could have arrested him for that at the time as well. So there's any number of statutes that he may have violated, any one of which would give rise to probable cause for the arrest. And I think the argument that because they left and you know started to clear the call, that doesn't finish the encounter, that doesn't prevent them. There's no law or case law that I'm aware of that says once you call dispatch, police are no longer allowed to arrest someone for a violation of the law. And you know, I think given the entire circumstances, the trial court, you know, observed it was the officers who, you know, at the scene were encountering a very agitated individual who was obstructing their investigation. Instead of, you know, continuing the confrontation, they decided to try to de-escalate the confrontation by giving an order to go inside, shut the door, be quiet. And it was Mr. Descali who continued the confrontation by waiting until they got all the way to their car and then yelling out the window at them. And at that point, they decided both, you know, because of those actions and also their concern for the safety of the individuals in the apartment to go back in. Mr. Descali again violates their order by coming out of the apartment and confronting them another time. So I think given all those facts, certainly, you know, the officers, it was reasonable for the officers to believe that Mr. Descali had violated the statute and placed him under arrest and took him to the magistrate and proceeded from there. And so, you know, given those facts, then certainly the conviction for assault on the law enforcement officer is also valid and you know, we don't even have to get to whether his resistance was reasonable or unreasonable. So I think given the facts, again, it was clearly unreasonable, but again, I think going back to the court's concern and the issue raised by the court, and the Commonwealth also is concerned that if this type of resistance...
I'm gonna ask you about that last statement. He was shot several times with a taser. Why was his conduct subsequent to that unreasonable? Why was that an escalation of the force?
Your Honor, I think the issue that made his resistance unreasonable was his use of his own feces as essentially a weapon against the officer.
The officers had deployed an actual weapon against him, albeit non-lethal, a weapon. And he did not up the ante in the sense that he then used a physical weapon of just fought back with his hands, and the fact that he soiled himself is you know, almost a function of the assault by the officers more than anything he did.
Well, Your Honor, I think we're bound by the facts that the trial court found, and the trial court found that his actions were intentional, that he intentionally, used his own feces to assault the officer. And I think given those facts, that's certainly unreasonable escalation of force to repel an arrest. Again, I think the Commonwealth's position obviously is that the arrest was lawful, and so his use of force was unlawful. But even if the court were to find that the arrest was, that there wasn't probable cause for the arrest, his escalation of force by intentionally using his own feces to strike the head and basically smear on the head and the uniform of the officer was unreasonable. And I think that that kind of finding would really only encourage further violence and would encourage resistance. And that's a Commonwealth's concern, is that the idea of resistance, reasonable resistance to an arrest, was founded in a time in which the harm, there weren't as many protections to the defendant as there are now, and certainly with all of the developments in the law, all of the developments in the legal process that have occurred since that doctrine was established, the Commonwealth has great concerns about the effect of encouraging additional confrontations in particularly in instances like this, where there's already an agitated individual involved, possibly domestic issues involved, which can escalate it very rapidly, as the court has recognized. So those are the Commonwealth concerns. But even beyond that, I think the use of force here was an escalation that was unreasonable. Aside from that, if the court has no further questions, the Commonwealth will rest upon its brief.
Thank you, counsel. Are there any questions?
I have none. Thank you.
None for me.
Thank you. Ms. Seismic, if you would like to conclude.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you very much. I'd like to conclude just by addressing again the question of a reasonable police officer. When the police officers left the apartment, the lights went out, and obviously the police officers said they listened and they went to the street. However, it was testified that by Mr. Descoli that there is allegations that police officers were laughing and made anti-gay comments. We don't know if that's true or not. Nobody was there. However, that certainly goes to Mr. Descoli's state of mind, if he believed that to be true. And again, when the police officers were out there, they did not say to dispatch that they were going in to investigate a breach of the peace or failure for Mr. Descoli to obey their commands to keep quiet. They said they were investigating a noise complaint.
Ms. Sizek, set aside for a moment 18.2-463. Let's focus on whether they had probable cause for another offense, 18.2-416. We used to call it the curse and abuse statute. In Burgess versus City of Virginia Beach, we held that a defendant who drove by two police officers who were attempting to control a large crowd and yelled "F cops" violated that statute. Then in Smith versus Commonwealth, we held that a woman who said called a police officer a white MF, using the more graphic term, and a white man's ass-kissing why weren't the words used by this defendant arguably at least probable cause that he had violated that statute?
Again, Your Honor, he was not arrested for that. The police did not.
Does that matter?
I think it
subjective,
matters.
Hear me out. Does the subjective intent of the police officer control, or are we looking at whether there was probable cause for any offense at all?
I think that it's clear that this was a First Amendment issue. You know, he has a right inside. He was inside his house. He was not outside. He was talking to somebody else, and then he gave them a gesture. And certainly, the Supreme Court has ruled that the police officers have to take a certain amount of abuse from the public because of the First Amendment. I still believe.
Well, I'm not sure that's what we said in Smith, because we cited a case that said law enforcement officers are not held to a higher level of restraint.
Again, Your Honor, in my brief, I think I cited the Supreme Court in their case. I think certainly Cohen versus the United States. Yes, Your Honor?
This is not a First Amendment case. This is a Fourth Amendment case, mm-hmm. And we're talking about probable cause, which we have to look objectively at the facts, whether an objective, reasonable police officer would have determined that there was probable cause to arrest for a crime.
And we recently held in Freeman that police officers are entitled to enforce an otherwise apparently lawful statute, even if it might be found unconstitutional at a later time. We have a facially valid statute on the books.
I understand, Your Honor, and I'm familiar with that case. I guess my argument would be that was not what the police intended. Even if you use the reasonable police standard, they were arresting him. Or they went to go into the apartment based on a noise complaint. They did not mention curse and abuse or anything. So their intention at the time was to arrest him for breach of the peace, not any of these other statutes. And so the question was, based on that alone, did they have probable cause to walk in? And when Mr. Descoli stepped out of his apartment and said, to essentially get the F out of there, it's clear they just put him into handcuffs. They supposedly were investigating a noise complaint, and they did not question him.
The Virginia Supreme Court in Sullivan versus Commonwealth said that it is immaterial that the officer advised the defendant he was being arrested for disorderly conduct instead of for obstructing an officer in the discharge of his duties. As long as there is probable cause for some offense, the fact that the officer chose the wrong offense to actually announce is immaterial.
And I understand, Your Honor. I guess my argument would just finally be that I don't think a reasonable officer would believe that there would be probable cause that Mr. Descoli had breached the peace or done anything. I do recognize there's a curse and abuse statute. But he was inside his own home when he was making those comments. There was nobody else around. The police.
Well, that was a public hallway, was it not? The common area.
There's one other apartment, and it's an upstairs area. There's stairs to the upstairs area.
So,
it's really
so he was not. He was not actually in his own home. He was in a common area outside the door of his home.
Which he pays for the heat and everything. His understanding of his own home is that the police were inside of his home by going into what they refer to as the common area. The mailboxes are on the outside. All the mail is left on the outside. The doorbells are on the outside of the house where the porch is. So police had actually come into what is an area that they decorate, that they pay heat for. There is an upstairs tenant. Thank you, counsel.
Are there any other questions? Judge Decker?
I have none. Thank you for your argument.
Thank you very much, counsel. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you for your consideration, Your Honor.
Thank you. We will adjourn to our dispositional conference, and counsel, have a good day. Thank you.
Thank you.